Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It will take years before the Affordable Care Act, ACA, also known as Obamacare, is fully implemented. It will do so incrementally. Some provisions are already in effect, such as banning denial of coverage for pre-existing conditions and allowing young adults to remain longer on parents' policies. The next ACA stage begins on October 1st, and key provisions will go into effect in 2014, with many to follow in succeeding years. On October 1st, people can start signing up with health exchanges for coverage to begin on the 1st of January next year. Polls show many Americans are still confused about all of this. With me in studio is Professor Sydney Watson of St. Louis University's Health Law Policy Center. She has been our go-to person on ACA issues from the very beginning. A little later, we'll visit with CPA Lance Weiss with SFW Partners, LLC, about how the Affordable Care Act will affect taxes and business. And we'll also hear from Cynthia McCafferty, Senior Vice President and Partner at Fleischman Hillard, about marketing and promoting the next phase of the Act. First, we'll go to Sydney Watson. Thank you both, by the way, for being here. Nice to see you. Sydney, good to see you again.
It's nice to be back.
Well, we've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's begin by my asking you to explain exactly what's going to be happening October 1st.
Well, October 1st, our federal health insurance marketplace exchange will be going online. Missourians who are looking for health insurance in the individual market and the small group market will be able to see the plans that are available to compare premiums and choose a plan. Coverage will start effective January 1.
It's a little different in Missouri than it is going to be in Illinois.
Yes. Here in Missouri, we will have an exchange marketplace run by the federal government. In Illinois, the state will be running their marketplace. The other big difference between Missouri and Illinois is that Illinois is expanding their Medicaid program, and Missouri has so far not taken that step. Come January 1, we should have close to 1 million uninsured people here in Missouri eligible for new coverage. A little more than half of them will be able to purchase plans on the exchange, about 80% with new premium tax credits to help with affordability. But about half of the uninsured here in Missouri are eligible for that Medicaid expansion. So we are leaving a lot of people behind.
What's the most confusing aspect of this part of the process in your mind?
Moving into setting up the exchanges, we know that about 78% of the uninsured who are eligible for this new coverage don't know about it yet. So the biggest challenge right now is getting the word out.
Well, while we're on that subject, Illinois, as a matter of fact, has just signed a lucrative contract with Fleischman Hillard, the local marketing and promotional organization. And we spoke a little earlier today with Cynthia McCafferty, Senior Vice President and Partner at Fleischman Hillard. This is a $35 million contract, by the way. We spoke with her, and she agreed that this is a most complicated task.
There is no question that this is absolutely a very complicated and complex communications challenge. It's really kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many communicators to take on something this complex.
What's the big challenge as you see it?
You know, I think there's actually a couple of challenges. First of all, just the awareness and understanding of health insurance in general is something that most Americans have some confusion about. This is a brand new system. How the marketplace works is something that no one quite knows yet, and so that's certainly a challenge. And then you also have lots of competing messages that have been out there for a number of years because the legislation obviously was passed a few years ago, and it's just now taking effect. So there's a lot of confusion regarding what's in effect now, what's going to happen, what do I need to do.
When are you going to start it?
Certainly, we're working with the state of Illinois, and we're also working with the Missouri Foundation for Health, and the efforts will really start kicking off later this summer and early fall.
I was not aware that you're working the Missouri side.
Yes, we're working with the Missouri Foundation for Health and the Cover Missouri Coalition.
That further complicates it, because we're, on the one hand, we're talking about state exchanges, and here in Missouri it's going to be federal.
You know, that's actually the state, for the state of Missouri, and actually for most states, when you have communities that are on borders, you do have that additional challenge. So obviously here in the St. Louis area, we've got listeners who are on the Illinois side, and we've got listeners who are on the Missouri side. On the other side of the state, we've got folks who are in Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri. And so that certainly is one of the factors that adds to the complexity across the country, quite frankly.
There's nothing about ACA that isn't uncomplicated, that's for sure.
I think that that's a very accurate statement.
Who is paying the bill on this? It's a pretty hefty contract. Are the feds paying it, or is it the state of Illinois and perhaps in some part Missouri?
For the Illinois contract, that was an RFP that was issued by the state. I am not sure exactly where the funds came from and how much of that are state dollars versus federal dollars. The work that we're doing in Missouri is being done in coordination with the Missouri Foundation for Health.
Fleischmann-Hillert, of course, is a pretty big operation. Are you working in other states as well?
You know, this is actually where we've got a lot of different activities that are happening related to the ACA across the country, absolutely, in a variety of ways, yeah.
Our time is limited. Anything you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
You know, I think the most important thing is that our challenge in front of us is how do we make, how do we equip Missouri and Illinois residents with the information they need to be able to make the choice that's right for them. It's a confusing, difficult issue, and our goal is to simplify that and help make sure that everybody is able to make a smart choice that makes sense for them and their families.
That is Cynthia McCafferty, Senior Vice President and partner at Fleischmann-Hillert. Spoke to her a few minutes ago by phone. Fleischmann-Hillert has just received a $35 million contract to promote and explain this very, very complicated Affordable Care Act to people in Illinois and certainly here in Missouri. Sydney, your take on what you just heard is there's a lot of work to be done.
There's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of planning and preparation going on at the federal level, at the state level. Here in Missouri, the Missouri Foundation for Health, as was mentioned, has stepped forward and organized a campaign called the Cover Missouri Coalition to help coordinate efforts throughout the state to reach people using media, as was just talked about, but also to reach people using trusted messengers. We know that in talking to people who don't have insurance, the people they trust tend to be family members. If your mother tells you to get insurance, you tend to do it. So trying to reach people both through the media and through trusted messengers, including their physicians, nurses, family members, social service agencies, libraries, a multi-pronged campaign.
Is there enough time? October 1st is really just over the horizon.
Yes, because actually I think until we see what the plans are that are available and the prices on those plans, that it's hard to get people engaged in this conversation. By the end of August, September, those plans will be posted. Once we start the enrollment October 1, it becomes real and concrete. So there's going to be a lot of fast work, a lot of blitz campaigning, but it is work that has to be done once we know exactly what's available.
Going back to the exchanges, are the exchanges open to anyone who does not have insurance?
The exchanges are actually open to anyone who wants to use them. No one has to use them. The premium tax credits that will help make insurance more affordable for people earning between 100 and 400% of poverty. That's about $15,000 to about $44,000 for an individual. That is for people who are presently uninsured or don't have access to other affordable health insurance through their employer.
Now, President Obama said just a few days ago that, certainly there are going to be some glitches, and certainly there's going to be some tweaking. In fact, there already has. And one of the things being tweaked is this income verification aspect of this. What's that all about?
Well, part of it is showing you are eligible for one of these premium tax credits. credits and what your income is. In this first year, we're going to use more self-verification as we get the systems in place to double-check that the information is adequate. And more of those verification processes will be coming online. What we're trying to do, though, is to make signing up for insurance as least burdensome as possible. So people won't have to show up with lots and lots of paperwork, go back home and get things or enter information, documents into a computer program.
You talk about people showing up. I was under the impression that what they're trying to do is do most of this online.
Well, certainly there will be the ability to do it online. But one of the things that polling has showed us in talking to people is that most people who don't have insurance, who are making choices about insurance, want to talk to somebody about that and want to talk to somebody face-to-face. So in addition to being able to go online and do it online, there'll be a 1-800 number to call to get assistance. And we're also going to have individuals called navigators and certified application counselors to provide that face-to-face assistance and to expand the helpers. We already have insurance brokers and insurance agents who will be helping people. But we're going to have some new helper options.
I want to talk more about those navigators in detail in just a moment, but let's turn to Lance Weiss. This whole income verification thing, Lance, is going to be done through the Internal Revenue Service, your friend and mine.
Well, they are ever present, and they certainly carry a burden with regard to this law as well.
Well, before we get into some details and I take this next break, that's something I wanted to ask you about. As I see these numbers, the Affordable Care Act is 1,900 pages long. I think we've discussed in the past that the IRS code is 70,000 pages long. Is this potentially, from your point of view as a CPA, too much for the IRS to be involved in?
Well, that's probably a better question for somebody at the IRS. But one of the battles they fight is that the IRS is part of the executive branch of the government. So they have to report to President Obama and, you know, do basically as he directs them to do. On the other side of the deal, though, their budget is funded by Congress. So their hope was to go out and hire a few thousand agents to help with this income verification and some of the other things that the IRS is being asked to do here. And they're having trouble getting the funding to do that. So I don't really have any inside knowledge on the IRS and how they're going to do this, but it is a big expectation. Cindy, you might have more background on this than I do with how they're handling this internally.
Well, and I think part of the expectation is we're trying to set up computer interfaces so that we don't need a lot of people figuring this out, but the data can be transmitted electronically.
Yeah,
and I think part of the glitch is getting all of that
and
online.
The vision that I had of that would be how well and really how almost seamlessly it works with the student loan application. And how, as you go through and do the FAFSA forms, you click a few buttons and boom, your information is populated from the IRS's website. Now, nothing happens boom and quickly and overnight and perfectly with regard to technology and how all these things flow together. But I think in the best case, with enough funding, they probably could do it.
Well, nothing works very quickly when it comes to Congress either. And if Congress has a role to play with regard to funding, certainly the House of Representatives, which has now, I believe, 39 times tried to derail this whole process, this does not necessarily bode well, I wouldn't think.
Well, you never know what can happen in a dark room or a back room in Congress, but that view is shared by many.
Yeah. I have to take a break. We'll come back. And, Lance, I want to pick it up with you with some of the things going on with business because that's where some of the tweaking has already been done. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act, and the next milestone in implementation comes October 1st. With me in studio is Professor Sidney Watson of St. Louis University's Health Law Policy Center. CPA Lance Weiss is with SFW Partners, LLC, talking about the business side of this whole equation. Back to continue our discussion, and we certainly want your questions, because if you're confused, these are folks I believe can help eliminate at least some of that confusion. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our discussion about the Affordable Care Act. Some people call it Obamacare, including the president, by the way. And certain phases of this will be implemented on October 1st, and then January 1st is a big date for the ACA. My guests in studio, Sidney Watson of St. Louis University and CPA Lance Weiss. Lance, back to you with regard to the business element of this. There's been a delay in implementation of one part of this for businesses with more than 50 employees. What's going on there and how are they generally impacted?
Well, how the businesses are impacted in this regard is that the penalty phase has been pushed back. Instead of it applying for January 1 of 2014, now an employer won't owe the penalty until January 1 of 2015. And an employer could have been charged a penalty under two different situations. Either they should have been providing insurance and weren't, or they are providing insurance, but it's not good enough or it's not cheap enough. And under either one of those two scenarios, an employer could have been charged a penalty of either $2,000 times the number of people that should have been covered or $3,000 times the number of people who aren't getting it cheap enough or for whom it's not good enough.
When we talk about penalties, it's really an increase in taxes, is it not?
Well, these particular provisions really were penalties assessed to the employer. They were $2,000 per person in some instances and $3,000 in another instance.
I guess what I'm getting at, and I'm certainly as confused as most people about this, but there are potential tax increases in the business world in conjunction with ACA.
Yeah, and those tax increases are kicking in January 1 of 2013. Those have already started. And those tax increases only apply to some very high-income individuals. So if you're a single person and your W-2 is north of $200,000, there's a new 0.9% Medicare tax that started January 1 of 13. And then there's also an additional 3.8% tax on any unearned income, interest and dividend type income, but again, that kicks in at roughly $400,000. So we're talking about some very high level income taxes that really already started. Those have not been delayed.
What about businesses smaller than 50 employees?
Well, for the most part, the $2,000 penalty and the $3,000 penalty, if you had less than 50 employees, would not have applied to you at all. But there are still some things that those small employers can do to help their employees. And what Obamacare does is offer a tax credit to those businesses who do provide insurance, even though they don't have to. And in 2013, the credits equal up to 35% of the amount they're paying on behalf of their employees. And in 2014, the credit goes up to 50% of the amount that they contribute toward for their employees. Now, there's some pretty harsh phase outs in that area, depending on if you have, 15 employees, 20 employees, that credit can get down instead of 35%. It can get down to 2, 3, 4, 5% in a hurry.
Basically, what the law is trying to do is to keep employers from dumping the health insurance on the federal government. Is that correct?
Well, that's what the penalty provisions are for. But the penalty levels, if a company is faced purely with that economic decision of would I rather pay the penalty or would I rather contribute to the health care cost, paying the penalty, at least in the early years, would be more cost effective. But what every one of our clients is doing in that regard, Don, is they're looking at what's the social impact. I mean, there are employers out there who care about their employees, and they also know that offering health insurance is a recruiting necessity in many instances. I just won't go to work for this company if they're not going to offer health insurance.
Right. Sidney, you look like you were taking some exception to the—
Oh, no, I agree completely. I think I was taking exception to the way you asked the question, Don.
I tried to soften it up a little bit there.
I don't think the expectation of the employer penalty was ever that it would force employers to offer health insurance. It is a nudge. It is a reminder. If anything, I think it was viewed as an equity penalty. For employers with 50 or more employees, about 97% of them already offer health insurance. So to some extent, it was viewed as a way to try to level the playing field between that 3% the kind of who are free riding and not offering their employees health insurance.
Well, next time I raise the subject, Sydney, I'm going to try to ask it. I think the way that is more suitable.
Yeah, there's probably a middle ground down between the harshness and the non-harshness of the penalty, and I think a lot of that is industry specific. Certainly, you know, I have some clients who might own 3 or 4 franchise type restaurants. So if it's the client who has 3 or 4 Taco Bells or Subway restaurants, when we go to count who has 50 employees, those businesses get pulled into that calculation. And it would be nearly unheard of for a small franchisor to be offering insurance just because he went out and bought a third or fourth location. So there are some industries and some businesses who have, through their lobbying groups and specifically the National Restaurant Association, put a lot of pressure on the government to say, hey, you can't implement these this early. This is too expensive. And certainly it's been all over the news where a number of the, even the larger restaurant chains are trying to put many of their employees back on this less than 30-hour per week calculation. And more part-timers aren't good for the economy either.
Yeah, we aren't really sure which way that is going to go, particularly in, for example, the service industry, which doesn't have a history of providing generous employer-sponsored health insurance. So this extra year for employers, particularly these employers who are right at that 50 full-time employees cusp, to figure out how these changes are going to affect them, to accommodate the change, to do some planning, I think it's a win for everyone.
Yeah, it really is. And one of the things that we hope the other year will bring is some clarity as to the definition of what is an employee and what is a shared employee and what if I lease employees. And there were so many questions coming to the Health and Human Services Division and the Department of Labor and the IRS, because all three of these people are throwing out rules and definitions of how the law should work, that, you know, me as a CPA and certainly Sydney, you as someone who's trying to advise these people on what all these different words mean, there were some conflicting opinions out there and conflicting advice.
So it's probably better to delay it for a year and get it right, or get it more right than it might have been otherwise.
I agree. Yes.
In today's political environment, certainly. Sydney, back to you on the question of navigators. These are the real people that will be available to assist those people who have questions about the exchanges. We're just now beginning to start training these folks, aren't we?
Yes. Our navigators will be selected by the Federal Exchange. There's a competitive application process. The applications have been submitted. We'll hear who was selected about August 15th. The Federal Exchange has then put together about a 40-hour training program. You have to pass an exam at the end of that training program. The navigators will be certified, and they will be charged to do outreach, education to the general community, and also provide this one-on-one assistance.
But now Missouri has passed a law which is requiring that that these people be licensed by the state as well, which is just another level of preparation for this task.
Yes, that's SB 262. It was passed in the last 2 days of the legislative session. It requires navigators and other enrollment assisters and educators to get a state license, to go through state training, to pay a state licensing fee. I think what happened was there was a lot of misinformation in Jefferson City. That many of our elected officials were led to believe that these navigators would have no training. They didn't understand the role that the Federal Exchange would be playing. Right now, we're waiting for regulations to be issued by the Department of Insurance. The legislation has some kind of lack of clarity. It could create some problems, or the Department of Insurance may figure out a way to develop a middle ground. We'll just have to wait and see.
I assume it could also mean a delay. I mean, again, October 1st looms.
I don't think there will be a delay. The Affordable Care Act explicitly says that it preempts any federal law that would prevent implementation of the exchanges. So if this state law stands in the way of the federally funded navigators doing their jobs, that law will not be able to be enforced.
Well, the legislature this year didn't have any trouble trying to preempt gun control laws, federal gun control laws, but that's another issue for another day. What else do we need to know, Sydney, before I go to the phones with regard to what's coming up? Anything that we haven't touched upon?
Well, we're getting great news from states that have state exchanges about what premiums are looking like on the exchanges. The 11 states that have posted premiums, they're about 20% less than we would have expected without the exchanges, without new rate review laws, and without these new medical loss requirements that requires insurers to return 80 to 85% of our premiums to us in medical care.
Is there a number that can be used as to what the average cost of these new policies might be?
Well, remember, with the new premium protections, we'll all be paying the same in Missouri, with variations based upon age and where we live in the state and whether or not we're a smoker, and, of course, whether or not we have individual or family coverage.
But should be less than what we're currently paying.
If experience holds, it'll be about 18 to 20% less than it would have been otherwise.
So an article in the Belleville News Democrat a couple of days ago, a couple of prominent doctors over there associated with hospital leaders, if you will, were saying that this whole process is going to be more efficient and save a lot of money.
It should be, because we'll be able to see everything that's available, be able to compare plans. The plans will all have essential health benefits, including that preventive coverage, maternity care, mental health.
Lance, from the business and tax standpoint, what can you add before I go to the phones?
Well, I know our premium renewal for 2014 went up by 31%. Well, so, you know, there's all sorts of different evidence, and I think certainly when we take into account some of the credits that are out there, if your income is at that 100% to 400% of the poverty level, the credits will certainly help reduce what a person might pay out of pocket. But I think absent the credits, for the most part, I think people are still expecting some pretty heavy premium increases.
I think it's going to depend on the individual business, the individual. One of the challenges in Missouri has always been, because we allow medical underwriting and insurers to charge sick people and people with a history of medical illness higher rates, that those of us who are healthy and don't need health insurance can get a policy that's very inexpensive, and those of us who need health care are shut out or priced out of the market. So it's going to be interesting.
A critical part of this, as I understand it, is the fact that in this whole promotion marketing process is to get as many young people into this thing as possible so that the pool is as deep as it possibly can be.
Right. I think that's certainly the goal. Let's have more people enrolled, more young people.
Young,
who
healthy
need the,
people.
Yeah,
yep.
Young, healthy people who won't draw on the system and contribute to the system. It'll be an interesting year and a half, however long it takes to get more of these changes out there.
Let's go to the phones. We'll start with Ian calling from Maryland Heights. Ian, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, my question was mainly about the subsidies and who would be eligible. As far as for me personally, I've already got employer coverage, but the rates are pretty high. It's about 20% of my salary, and I was wondering if it would be based on something like that, you know, what percentage of your salary are you paying out of pocket, or if it's going to go by, you know, percentage of poverty rate, just like you were saying with individual payers.
Yeah, there's actually a twofold calculation that comes into play there, and one of them is the employer can be penalized if the cost of the single person insurance is more than 9.5% of that person's either individual or household income. And again, household is one of those definitions we're waiting for a little clarity on. But to have your premiums at 20% of a person's income seems high. I think the goal there with the law is to bring that down to 9.5%. Should be the, you know, 9%, I think Sydney just corrected me.
About 8%.
Yeah. So, you know, that's certainly the goal, and the penalties kick in if it's more than 9.5% to the employer. Actually, on the SBA.gov website, there's a pretty good tool there that can help estimate what the premium might be based on your area. So there's two websites, and Sydney, I know you have many more than that you follow real closely, but the SBA.gov from the business standpoint has been very helpful with helping me gather some information to help our clients with. And then KFF, the Kaiser Family Foundation.org, has been very good with kind of helping make understandable some of the provisions that are out there.
Yes, and healthcare.gov, which will be our exchange website, was relaunched lately, and you can go on there and look. But if your employer-sponsored health insurance is costing you 20%, you should be eligible if you earn under about $45,000 as an individual for these premium tax credits. But I think we're all going to advise you to find one of those navigators. It'll depend on your family situation, your family income. We'll all figure this out over the next 2 or 3 years, so it'll be one of those numbers that we all know. For the first couple of years, we're all just going to have to sit down and work it through for the first time. But I think you need a navigator.
I'm going to give you a hypothetical, Sydney, if I may. We've covered some of this before, but just to kind of put it together. I'm a part-time worker. I'm working 20 hours a week, and I'm making $15,000 a year. What's in this for me, and what do I do?
You are a part-time worker. You don't have health insurance,
correct,
so you're uninsured. So here in Missouri, it's that question of whether you're eligible for exchange coverage with a premium tax credit, which we will have, or whether you're earning too little. Because you have to be earning over that federal poverty level to be eligible for premium tax credits. For those folks, it's the Medicaid expansion.
Okay.
So we will be leaving some people out. They'll be able to go to the exchange and purchase a policy, but they won't be eligible for the premium tax credits.
All right. Let's take a break now. I have to do that anyway and come back to the phones. Lots of questions. Still some confusion, I think, out there with regard to all of this, and that is something we're trying to rectify as best we can during the course of this program. Back in just a moment with Sydney Watson of St. Louis University and CPA Lance Weiss. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about the next step in the whole Obamacare process. Big date coming up on October 1st, as we've been talking about, and much of the news, as I indicated earlier, these days is dealing with things related to health care. And here are some of the stories you'll hear about starting at 3 o'clock today on St. Louis Public Radio. A Missouri House Interim Committee is meeting on improved government responsiveness and efficiency. It's expected to focus on the delivery of Medicaid services to patients and clients. That's important in the context of our conversation. Earlier this morning, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn signed a bill expanding Medicaid coverage in Illinois to about 342,000 low-income adults. And former White House Chief of Staff Bill Daley is holding a press conference this hour, calling for Governor Quinn to hold around-the-clock talks to resolve the state's $97 billion pension shortfall. These stories and more beginning at 3 and throughout the day on our website, stlpublicradio.org. Let's go right back to the phones. Doris joins us from St. Louis. Thanks for waiting, Doris. You're on the air.
Hello. I read something about this nonprofit co-op that is something that can be formed to assist in providing the health insurance. Can you tell me more about that? And is that an option for the small business person?
So the co-ops were a provision in the Affordable Care Act to create a not-for-profit insurance option. There were planning grants made available so that in each state, not-for-profits could come together. They would be owned by the people who bought the policies. They would be for individuals. A number of states moved forward, got their co-ops approved. We had an application in here in Missouri from the Mission Center, took the lead on that. And then when Congress sequestered the federal budget, all of those co-ops that were in the pipeline were frozen. So we will not have a co-op option, at least in 2014. Here in Missouri. I don't know what happened in Illinois.
All right. I want to thank you then.
Yeah, that's, I think, a real loss. They are an interesting alternative. They were an attempt to bring a new kind of competition and choice to the individual market.
Thank you for calling, Doris. Can states like Missouri, which opted against the state exchange. Can they change their mind next year, 5 years from now, whenever?
Anytime. There is no cutoff. We have the option first if we'd like to set up a partnership exchange, if we'd like to kind of put a toe in the water and take over some of the functions of the exchange and then move to a fully state exchange, should we want to do that.
From the business side down, there's a very interesting lawsuit that was filed by the Oklahoma Attorney General. And what that lawsuit claims is that the penalty provisions that apply to businesses would apply to only those states that have a state-sponsored exchange. So the Oklahoma AG is contending that because in Oklahoma they will have a federal-sponsored exchange, then no business in Oklahoma could be charged a penalty for the failure to provide the insurance. So I think part of the delay could have also been caused by letting these sorts of cases work their way through the court to see if even the penalty provisions could apply in some of these states, because I think it's only 13 states who have their own exchange.
Well, I don't think that was the reason for the delay in the employer mandate. I think the statutory construction that the Oklahoma Attorney General is relying on in that case is tortured, to say the least. I don't predict much success in that piece of litigation.
There is also an effort on Capitol Hill, now that the delay has for business has been gone into effect or will go into effect next year for a year, that they want to delay the individual mandate for a year. I wonder if there's any chance in the world that that can happen.
I'll defer to Sydney on that.
Well, I think there is possibility of it getting out of the House. I doubt that it would be passed by the Senate, and President Obama has said that he would veto that provision if it did get through Congress. Certainly that's more troublesome, to delay the individual mandate, because that is the mechanism in the law to nudge people, to encourage them to purchase health insurance. And as you pointed out earlier, to make premiums affordable, we need a lot of people in the insurance market, and we know the least likely people to purchase insurance are those who are young and healthy.
You know, sometimes we assume that everybody knows everything that we're talking about when we use various terms here. Explain, Sydney, the individual mandate. Some folks might not understand what that means, and I'll bet a lot of them don't.
Yeah, I mean, probably a better term to use for it is the individual personal responsibility requirement. Which says that if there is affordable health insurance available, we should buy it. And if we do not buy it, there will be a tax penalty that's paid. If you earn enough money, don't have some hardship exemption or a religious exemption. And that does go into effect in 2014. It starts getting phased in. In the first year, the penalty is $95 per adult, half that for children, a family maximum of $285 per year. So one thing to notice is it's one of those nudges. It is certainly less expensive for most of us to pay that tax penalty than to pay the cost of health insurance.
Yeah, exactly. A nudge is probably exactly the right word, because it's not a hammer.
Yeah, and for the Affordable Care Act to work, these new choices of health insurance on the health insurance exchange are going to have to be policies that people want and that people think are good value for their dollar.
Did I read within the last few days that some of the biggest insurance carriers are backing away somehow from what's going on?
Well, the Post-Dispatch had a story that said that United Healthcare has decided
Cigna
not
also,
to.
Cigna also, I think.
I didn't see Cigna. But we're anticipating that we should have choices on the Missouri exchange. HHS has been doing the negotiating for states that are using the federal exchanges. They actually reopened the insurance bidding process in Mississippi because they did not have enough insurers competing in rural counties in Mississippi, and just yesterday issued an announcement that they now have enough plans in Mississippi. And Mississippi was their concern. They haven't been concerned about Missouri.
I guess that's what struck me, is the notion that the insurance companies can decide not to get involved.
Yeah, no, the exchanges are voluntary for consumers, voluntary for small employers, and voluntary for health insurers.
The idea being, I guess, that they would want to come into this because there's such an increased pool of potential customers.
Yes. Yeah. You know, although I think it's a little more complicated when you're a state like Missouri that has an expanded Medicaid. Mm-hmm. But one thing I have to mention about United Healthcare is the product they've been selling in Missouri in the individual market is Golden Rule. And Golden Rule Health Insurance is fairly well known for being a product with high out-of-pocket costs, not many benefits, probably wouldn't comply with the minimum requirements in the Affordable Care Act. For coverage. So they are probably waiting to make a decision kind of how they're going to position themselves in the individual market going forward.
From the Golden Rule to the Golden Years, let's bring in Rosie calling from Wildwood. She's bringing seniors into this equation, which is something we should be talking about. Go ahead, Rosie.
My question is, my husband and I are both covered by Medicare, but for our supplemental insurance, we pay $1,035 per month, which is extremely expensive. How can the Affordable Care Act help senior citizens?
Well, the way the Affordable Care Act has helped seniors primarily is in closing that donut hole, that gap in prescription drug coverage for seniors. It didn't really address some of those issues around supplemental coverage that you're talking about. But other help that it brought to seniors in addition to better drug coverage is that now Medicare covers preventive services at no cost. We have also seen that the payment rates to the private Medicare Advantage plans have been reduced by about 14%. And that's actually produced drops in premiums for Part A and B in Medicare. So that's where we see the kind of the gains for seniors.
Yeah, it's these supplements that have gotten so expensive, though. And those are based on income. And those with the higher sources of other income pay this $1,035 a month, where many people in Missouri and across the whole country only pay a supplemental cost of about $135, I think, per month.
So she can't go to an exchange?
No, the exchanges are for people under 65. We left Medicare in place as our insurer for seniors.
Let's bring Gabriel into our discussion. Go ahead, Gabriel in St. Louis. You're on the air.
Good day. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I just had a quick comment and then a quick question. The comment is, I feel that there's a lot of hand-wringing about complexity when it comes to these new ideas regarding the new insurance type of plan. And I think we have to check that and think back to the fact that the current situation, insurance itself is complex, and that's right now. It's often an illusion of healthcare when you actually become ill. And then insurance now is, as I mentioned, expensive, and that millions don't have it. So we should not really be contrasting these new ideas and new approaches to improving the situation against something that already is complex and extremely problematic in many ways. I think we have to look at that obvious point. And the quick question is, if you could reiterate why Missouri has chosen not to expand Medicare, which seems like it would really help a lot of people, I think that should be pointed out again.
Yeah, this Medicaid we're talking about.
Okay.
All right. Who wants to pick up on our caller?
Well, I think the first part of Gabriel's comment about complexity is very important. One of the reasons we have complexity is that we're keeping in place multiple sources of insurance. We're leaving employer-sponsored insurance for people for whom it's worked well. We're creating new private options through the exchanges for people who are uninsured. And we're hoping to expand Medicaid. And when you have multiple insurance sources, it's a little more complicated. But it's a whole lot better to have a source of health insurance than not.
How many people potentially, Sydney, can benefit from this? I've seen recently as many as 50 million. It was 30-plus million a year or two ago.
Yeah, it was about 32 million when we passed the bill. And I think the last time the census figures came out, we were talking 50 million.
Okay, back to our listeners. This is one for you, Lance. This is from Sean. He reaches us through Facebook. I don't have insurance. I don't want insurance. If I choose to continue not getting insurance, how can I get around the tax?
Well, there's really not a way around the tax. I guess if there's any solace there, it would be that in 2014, the penalty is only $95 if the individual chooses not to get the insurance. In 2015, it goes to $325. And then 2016 and beyond, it's I think it's still under $700 is the penalty somewhere in there. So and there is no way around the penalty as it stands right now, other than the exemptions that Sydney talked about before with income below or at income below the 400% of poverty level, you can get a credit to help pay for part of it. There are also some religious exemptions. Certainly if you're already covered with a plan, be it Medicare or through the Veterans Administration, there are some other exemptions. But for the most part, without one of those exemptions, there's no hiding from the penalty.
400% of poverty level is what?
About $45,000 for an individual.
Yeah, and then they also adjust that for a family. So for a family of, say, three people, that 400% of poverty level is north of $70,000. So at that point, we're capturing a very large percentage of the country.
I can't believe that this nudge, as we've called it earlier, isn't more severe. If they want to get people, force people into it, that they don't use that hammer.
Well, the model comes from Massachusetts. And the decision there was that it would never be a force, but this nudge, this encouragement. So when we say that starting in 2014, everyone must have insurance, technically that's not true. It's always going to be a choice. Well, so I guess what I'd say to Sean is, you know, I'd like to talk a little bit about personal responsibility and thinking about why he might ought to think about reconsidering his position on health insurance.
Yeah, and a common argument I hear is that the if there's no penalty for pre-existing conditions, why not just sign up on my way to the hospital? Mm. But there are some pretty strict guidelines on when you can sign up. So the exchange opens in October. You have until the end of the year and then maybe 40-some-odd days.
Yeah, this is a really important point. Those of us who have employer-sponsored insurance are used to each year having a sign-up period. For people using the exchanges, there will be annual sign-up periods. This year, it's October 1 through March 2014. You need to get signed up then, because if you wait until April, it will be too late. You're going to have to wait until the next year. In future years, the sign-up period will be October 1 to the end of December.
We have just limited time left. I'll bring in Phil calling from Baldwin. Phil, time's beginning to get away, so make it concise, please.
Right. The problem with both Medicare and these insurance programs is that you have to be smarter than your doctor, and you have to be able to predict what future diseases or illnesses you're going to have. This is a total bogus plan. I just qualified for Medicare this year. I turned 65. This is crazy. They took my money for over 47 years in all the health that I had. I paid for my own insurance. Now I have to pick a plan. I have to be smarter than my doctor and be able to predict the future, too. If I'm going to predict the future, I'm going to go buy a lotto ticket or Powerball. Have a nice day. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Phil.
We added private plans to Medicare to give people the choice of signing up for a specific plan with specific benefits. But in Medicare, seniors have the option of signing up for traditional Part A and Part B Medicare and going to see any doctor who accepts Medicare. Now, if you want the prescription drug coverage, you do have to pick a private plan. And that was part of the way Congress expanded and included a prescription drug benefit. I share a bit of the frustration that it can be hard to pick the best plan. And that's going to be one of our challenges as we implement the Affordable Care Act, is people getting used to making choices.
We have less than a minute left. Want to put a bottom line on this for me from your standpoint, Lance?
Well, I would say stay tuned, because there seems to be a new announcement out. Certainly, if not every day, I would say every week there's a new announcement that comes down. So from the business standpoint, I keep a close eye on the SBA.gov website. I will look at the healthcare.gov to see you know, what might come out of there as well. But it, just stay tuned is really about all we can say. October will be a big date with those individual exchanges.
Sydney?
I hope you'll have us back October 1 so we can talk about what's available.
Okay. Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see what's available in this state and what happens between now and then to maybe change things again. Thank you so much. Sydney Watson, St. Louis University's Health Law Policy Center. CPA Lance Weiss is with SFW Partners, LLC. Always appreciate having both of you with us. Thank you so much. Most informative program. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll get an update on STL Youth Jobs, a pilot summer jobs program which seeks to provide employment to at-risk youth. And we'll talk with Tommy Sowers of the Department of Veterans Affairs about providing opportunities to veterans. We'll also talk with St. Louis Public Radio science reporter Veronique LaCapra about her recent trip to the Galapagos Islands. Archived version of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.